It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. We're about to break it down during your lunch break. This is Hockey Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
From downtown Toronto, looking in on the parade in Washington, D.C. today. The Capitol celebrating their Stanley Cup championship with a civic movement. And there's a lot of people out there in the streets enjoying this one. Darren Millard here in Hockey Central. It's parade day for the Capitals, plus moving day for a couple of teams when they're looking at getting their rosters in order for next year. And game day for the Toronto Marlies and the Texas Stars as they get set to play game six of the Calder Cup final. Here in the studio, along with former NHLer, AHLer, it is Mark Savard. And, well, I mentioned AHLer, not as any type of...
Proud of those roots.
Yeah, because you were the AHL, Calder Cup. And then here's Damian Cox. Why did you think I was making fun of him there?
Because you were always making fun of him.
Not always. Not every day.
A little bit.
But every day we're together.
You asked why I laughed. I gave you an answer.
Every day we're together, yes. The New York Islanders also make a move in their front office regarding the Lou Lamoriello stocking his cupboard. We'll chat with the new head coach of the New York Rangers, David Quinn, in just a little bit. Bob McGill, Toronto Marlies color analyst, will stop by. But parade day. Everybody loves a parade. Every time we go through this and we see a first-time city celebrating this, and they got to plan the route because they haven't had this route before for a hockey, because hockey's a little bit different, but they're going to finish downtown. It's fun, and I think, what's it going to be like? Where is it going to be in Canada? I just have that automatic default.
Where is the parade going to be?
Yeah, is it going to be in Winnipeg? Is it going to be in Toronto? Is it going to be Montreal?
Everything starts with Winnipeg.
What will that be like?
That's all he could think about. Yes. I can't wait to know the route when we have the parade in Winnipeg.
It would have just been simpler. Washington is an interesting place for him to have. We were talking about the history of this franchise. And for many, many years, they played outside the downtown core. And they really weren't Washington's team in quite that way. They weren't that successful, though they were once David Poile got it going. But they played in Landover. They were kind of like the Ottawa Senators. They were way out of downtown. But once they moved downtown, and we saw it when they made the cup final in 98, it started to change. And the development around the arena began to change. And downtown Washington began to change. So now, to see all these people out supporting this team and excited about the first championship since, what, the Bullets, I guess, when they won the NBA title, it's been a long
Redskins,
time.
Right?
Oh, yes, that's right. It's been a long time coming for this town, and they're having a great time.
Trump's missing it, though.
Well, he doesn't want to be there because people will know there's more than out there than were for his inauguration.
How many parades were you?
I'll tell you, they are a great time. Yeah. They really are. And in Boston, when I was there, they did it up well. We had the duck boats, as you all know, and double deckers, and it was just a fantastic time. I couldn't believe the amount of people that actually show up. It is amazing.
People love parades.
They love it, and they're stacked 20 rows deep down the busiest streets in Boston. And I'm sure Washington's going to one-up that because it's been so long since they've had a championship there. It'd be something. And the way those guys are partying already, they've already had a couple of their own parades. So it'll be interesting to see.
You got to be impressed with the party.
Oh, I am so... my favorite when everybody talks about this and that, but when they're swimming in the fountains and they're doing belly flops and rolling around together, I was crying. It's great. It's a lot of fun and well-deserved.
Did you see Holpe and Ovechkin on Fallon last night?
I missed that. No.
And they tipped Fallon up to the cup dunk.
That's awesome.
First, they had the jockey on who piloted Justify to the Triple Crown. And they were just... It was just... Great. Drinking out of straws, beer out of the cup, or I don't even know what it was. It was interesting watching them have so much fun. So I've always wanted to ask you this. Not you particular, but somebody who's been in a parade. Is there a...
I always wanted to ask somebody this.
Yeah. So you have the main... So the guy with the cup. So that's Ovi. He's got the Conn Smythe. He's got the cup. How do you divide up who gets to ride with Ovi and who gets the other...
Well, they're
duck
they're
boats or floats.
They're actually ahead of their times now. The along the parade, the buses will stop and pass the cup back to another bus.
Oh, really?
So Ovi's not going to take the cup for the whole time. Everybody will get an opportunity.
He's had it for six days.
6 days. Yeah. So unfortunately, he's going to have to release this thing for a little bit throughout the parade, and it'll get Drock back from cup to cup. And you know, very exciting times. And the fans, you know, are really a huge. They're a huge part of it. And you know, you try and have as much fun with them, interaction with them on this day, because you know they've been waiting for years, and especially like I said in Washington, and this is going to be an incredible.
Because it would suck going through this parade not having the cup with you.
Exactly, you get your opportunity.
See, now we know
okay,
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now we know that. See, Damien and I, we'd be in the parade. We'd be at the back.
No, we wouldn't be in the parade. Like, why would we be in the parade
if we had a parade for? Oh, whatever
if we have
did.
In this dream scenario, yeah, in which this dream we're scenario, NHL players,
we would not be. Part of the parade. We would be way back. So is everybody part of the parade? Equipment staff?
Every single person that's in that organization yeah. will be on some sort of platoon or bus or whatever it is, and they will get an opportunity to have a cup on with them while they drive through the parade. There's usually an announcer on each bus or thing telling you who's on there as you're coming through. It's just a great time.
So what do you remember about yours? Other than the people.
I just remember, you know, just really enjoying it, soaking it in, you know, having the Stanley Cup hats on, the shirts, and you know, and making good conversation with fans, even though you're on the boat, because we were going pretty slow, and it's loud, and, you know, just having a real great experience and really loving, you know, soaking in every moment of it.
Because some teams didn't get a parade. New Jersey and Anaheim kind of finished in the parking lot where there's more of a rally, but and the rally is extreme. Like Chicago, those rallies in Chicago were awesome, but the parade.
Patrick Kane remembers some of them. Well, some of those moments.
That's kind of how it starts in Boston. We started with a rally.
Oh yeah,
you start with a rally up on a stage. And then we kind of slowly got on the buses, each group that was supposed to go on whatever bus, and that's how we did it.
It is one tradition in sports that is sort of universal and hasn't really changed. When you win, you get to have a parade.
So I watched your social media. You weren't crazy about Alexander Ovechkin's partying, or you were?
No, I'm fine. It's all good. You know, those guys, they've worked so hard for so long to do that. They're entitled to do whatever the heck they want. They really are, and they are having a good time.
And there's truth to it. I mean, this is a team that has fought demons for a while. So it's almost like, you know, usually, you say usually, but teams that win, you know, you go 2-3 days, but these guys are on a bender. Mm-hmm. And they're really enjoying it.
But I think it's not that unusual. The unusual part is that they're being in the public about it. But this is what teams do when they win. They go on a bender.
Yeah.
They just don't necessarily do it quite in public as these guys have done. And I think that's why people seem excited to see. They feel like maybe that they're more part of it rather than it being a private celebration.
Usually there's a rule. Teams will get out of town. Right, go somewhere else and have their party with the cup. And there's a rule: no posting. You can take the picture. Posting's been around for long enough that we've been down this path. But like, just know, be really careful with pictures and what's being done. These guys have been fairly. There's nothing illegal done either. So,
as long as nobody's getting behind a wheel or breaking anything, as long as they're just having a great time, they should have a great time.
We will watch with great interest to see how this goes. But the party is on in Washington as they had their parade day with the Capitals. Still nothing out of the Capitals. I thought it might come out today about Barry Trotz. They might just at the rally say he's coming back. And he's
What's the unfortunate thing is about these, because of the timing of the Stanley Cup and now the timing of free agency and the draft and everything is, I saw Philip Grubauer was out there. He's probably gone. And guys will get traded in the next week or 10 days or cut loose or not re-signed. It's a very short period of time that the team that won the cup gets to remain a team, because particularly in the salary cap era, moves have to start being made very, very soon. So part of, you know, their excitement is being on these floats together and celebrating and doing all that. And part of it is the guys who are experienced know it's the last time this group is together, because some of these guys, probably 5, 6, 7 of them, won't be back, won't be part of the Capitals next season. And so you have to enjoy every second of it the last couple of weeks that they're together.
Okay, when Dallas won, wasn't Roman Turek traded to St. Louis before the actual parade.
It's possible.
Jumps into my head.
Very possible.
That they moved him. So he was
Guys get moved really fast.
He was part of the parade, but he was not.
Well, and probably because they're deals that are already set up and agreed to. They just wait till after it's over to announce them. So, you know, that's a thing. But most of this Washington team, the guts, the important parts of this Washington team are going to be back. And they may be a little tired when the season starts again because they're having so much fun now.
Hungover.
But they're going to be a contender for a long time.
The do you guys remember a captain taking ownership of the cup post celebration, post presentation? Well, like Ovechkin, and he is with that thing 24/7.
I don't know. I don't remember all the captains, but I remember Mark Messier, and I remember Chara was.
Yeah,
he was. Captains tend to they tend to have the thing.
Yeah, the opportunity is there for them to hold it and do their interviews and be around the media more with it because of the captain.
But it is the de facto cup, right? For the first few days, is that the way it works?
I would say if you crunch numbers, Ovechkin's definitely leading right now. All captains, all captains to hold on to the Stanley Cup
for sure. Is it heavy?
It is heavy. It gets heavy. I just saw him here trying to lift it again. It looked like he almost shook his head. Like, oh, here we go. But he's got her up, and he ain't letting it go.
It's a great trophy.
It is the best.
Fantastic trophy.
He's having a blast. You're right. He might not let go today. It might be his for the day.
Look at that. Oh, Turk was traded 2 days after the Stars won the Cup. So, yeah, he was gone. He was no longer Stars property.
Guys. John Carlson's going to start talking to other teams. Really soon, and some of the other players on this group, and they're going to have to make salary cap adjustments and do stuff. So, got to enjoy it while it's there.
Okay, you guys have anything else to add on Stanley Cup party?
Not the party, but going back to next year with the Washington Capitals, I really see this team maybe doing something like Pittsburgh's done. I think Kuznetsov has a chance to be maybe the leading scorer in the NHL next year if he stays healthy and if he stays as focused as he was in the playoffs. This kid is Mr. Fedorov to me.
I think the big questions about Washington will be if they lose Carlson, how do they replace that? Significant guy if they do. And Braden Holtby, didn't start the playoffs, then played exceptionally well after a so-so regular season. So how will he return to the Capitals? Will he be this goalie next year, or will they be into a little bit of an uncertain area? So those are the two areas where you really look at the Caps in terms of repeating, and those would be the two biggest questions.
And I think you could attest to that. I think Holtby is one of the guys that's a mental goalie. And this is huge for him, I think. And don't you? Like, I think now the sky's the limit. And he's already had amazing regular seasons. And now I think the sky's the limit for this guy. If he can get a good defense core, Carlson comes back, it's all those questions in waiting. But I think he's going to be amazing.
Well, the way he handled that demotion, losing his job both in the regular season for a spell and then losing his job to start the playoffs, to be able to... We always ask our players to look out for the better of the team and what's going to be the best for... give you the best chance of winning. And when you're that frontline position, like a number one goaltender, it's easy to go south and have it.
But it happens. I mean, and I remember talking a couple of weeks ago when Carolina won it the first time, I think. Kevin Weeks started the playoffs. I might have this wrong exactly, but and then Artur Zerbe came in later.
When they went to the final.
He was a proud veteran. I think that's how it went. Anyways.
But I'm trying to think, like, if Hextall would have lost his job halfway through the year.
Well, he did. Hextall in Philly with Garth Snow. And they went to the final. And they were going back and forth.
And Hextall was breaking Vic sticks.
Vic sticks. You're right. It was Vic stick. Yeah. Belfour. There's some of those guys that just, it wouldn't have worked. Somehow Holtby made this thing work.
But the important, I think the one thing that's, it's how Holtby played. But that was a tough call for Barry Trotz. Because first of all, he had to make the tough call to start Grubauer. We're going to start the playoffs, which means he's our guy. And then after two games, to change your mind and say, no, we're going to go back to Holtby. That's a huge decision that probably, of the many decisions and the many things that happened along the way that won them the cup, that was the first big decision that really worked.
Okay, psychologically, I'm a half empty guy.
Okay, I didn't know where you're going with that.
I'm totally half empty. And so I look at it and go, between Grubauer and Holtby, where am I if this doesn't work? What's my option? if I start Holpe or if I start Grubauer.
That's a tough call.
So if I, but I'm not looking at it, okay, if I start Grubauer and it works, we're great and we've got this as a backup. I'm looking at what if I start Holpe and it doesn't work?
Mm-hmm.
I got Grubauer. If I start Grubauer and it doesn't work, well, at least I've got Holpe. And that's my half full kind of, or half empty kind of thing is at least I've got Holpe sitting here. That, yeah. I don't know whether Trotz is the same way or not.
I think he did it the right way, don't you? Like, well, obviously he did it the right way. They won. But I think starting Grubauer, the only thing they could do was gain, I think. You know, and saying that, like, they if he wins, he wins. If he loses, there he is. Holpe's there.
See, I thought it was weird. And at the time, and I said it. I
like, would you have started Holpe? Is that what
I would have. I would have gone with
stop a beach ball at that point in time. Well, he ended the year.
Two games later, he was great. So he obviously wasn't that bad off. But I would have gone with the established guy, and then if that didn't work. Mm-hmm. But clearly, Trotz, he picked, made the right choice.
And they got three posts in overtime and double overtime of game three.
There were a
against
lot
the
of things.
Columbus Blue
but
Jackets
you gotta
that,
have
avoided,
those
that avoided the 3-0 hole. You're really damned if you, he was in a tough spot.
Absolutely.
When you're, I just wonder whether they learned anything. Different scenario because one was an injury, from Matt Murray going down in the warm up the year before, and Marc-Andre Fleury picking up
kinda
the ball and the
though.
Backup. I know because one was an injury, but you still had the starter waiting in the wings, able to pick him up. I don't know whether they learned anything or not. Here's Bob McGill, our buddy, one of the toughest guys to ever play in the National Hockey League. Now he's a Toronto Marlies analyst, and he's covering the Calder Cup playoffs. So here with Darren Millard, along with Mark Savard and Damian Cox. It is game six tonight of the Calder Cup final at RICO. And a few of us have been down there for this March to the Calder Cup. It's a great environment. The Texas Stars trying to stay alive. Toronto can clinch the Calder Cup tonight with a win. So, Bob, tell me about the Toronto Marlies being pushed in this series like no other series that they've been challenged in this playoff so far.
Well, gentlemen, great to be on with you. And you know what? You're right, Darren. They kind of marched through the first. Well, they had difficulty in round number one. They went to game five and But then in rounds two and three, they swept both Syracuse and Lehigh Valley. And coming into the final series here against the Texas Stars, the Stars have really come together at the right time of the season, and they have really been a very good hockey club. And Derek Lakstal, the former Maple Leaf, who's coaching the hockey club,
has
done a great
Bob?
Job of preparing his team so that you know, they get to this point here, and obviously they're the first time this season in the Calder Cup playoffs that they are facing elimination. So the Marlies and Texas Stars here tonight, it's going to be exciting because every game has been really good. The first four were all one-goal games until the Marlies kind of blew it open the other night.
Bob McGill is chatting with us. Derek Lakstal played for the Wheat Kings.
Really?
Bob's cousin was the assistant coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. So Ryan McGill. So acknowledge that.
Now there are a couple of injuries. I think at least the Marlies are looking at. Bob, can you bring us up to date on Travis Dermott in particular? I think Freddie Gauthier's been nicked up. A couple of other guys. What kind of a lineup do you think they're going to have? And what about Texas? Do they have any injuries that they're thinking about for Game 6 tonight?
Well, Damian, I think that it's going to be a game-time decision whether Travis Dermott plays or not. He didn't play in game number five in Texas, so Andrew Nielsen drew in. And you know, obviously with their 6-2 victory, they find themselves with the opportunity here tonight to win. And Freddie Gauthier is going to play. He didn't skate this morning, but it was an optional skate, and a couple of different guys didn't hit the ice. He was banged up left game four, but came back, or game three, I guess it was, when he left partway through the game. But he came back and played in game four and game five. So that will be the only decision is whether Dermott can play tonight or not. I don't know if it'll happen, but regardless, I think their blue line, the other guys, when Dermott didn't play in game five, they really stepped up their game. For the Texas Stars, Gurianov, their former first-round pick of the Stars came in game four and then a game five, and I don't believe there's going to be any other lineup changes for the Texas Stars as they look to see if they can tie up this series at three.
Gurianov has been an intriguing lineup decision for them, whether or not he's in or out of the lineup. What have you been able to glean from that?
Well, you know what? It's interesting because, you know, he had a 19-goal season for the Stars, but was a healthy scratch at the end of round number three or number two, and then didn't play some of the games in round number three as well. He sat out, and then they decided to bring him back in game number four, because the one thing about the Stars in this series is their top line of Curtis McKenzie and Travis Moore
the other guy.
Can't talk to
the winger. somebody in your grill there? Somebody trying to get to you?
I know, their top line has been absolutely running the show for their hockey club. And if you shut down that line, they've had no secondary scoring whatsoever. So Gurionov has been the guy that they're trying to get back going, to try and provide them maybe with some secondary scoring, because if the top line doesn't get it done, nobody else has.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, Bob, you've been around the AHL and the NHL, but the AHL for a long time. Is this Marley's team the best AHL team you've ever seen?
You know what, Mark? It has been unbelievable. You know, you think of a couple of years ago, they won the President's Trophy for the American Hockey League 2 years ago, but they lost in the conference finals to the Hershey Bears. But this year, this club has been so good. They had one bit of a dip in December, and then from the end of December on, they lost 9 hockey games. And wow, they have been unbelievable. And they set an AHL record for most victories on the road this season with 30. And through the Calder Cup playoffs, they've taken their game to another level, I believe. And they have been won games in dominant fashion. Not only being able to score goals, but defend has been the more impressive thing. Like, they've given up less than 20 shots in numerous games here in the Calder Cup playoffs. And, you know, you look at those 3 games down in Texas, they allowed 6 goals in 3 games, and they won 2 of 3. And a big reason, again, why they've got the opportunity here tonight to win a Calder Cup. And they've been that dominant all season long. They were, you know, only gave up 170 goals against in the regular season. I think the closest team to them was about 35 goals differential.
So they just don't give up much. I saw a defenseman, Kyle Rosen, scored a couple of goals the other day, and he was a player who almost made the Leafs, or was possible roster player for Leafs this year. Didn't turn out that way. And now his name comes up again. In your estimation, and we've heard lots of names coming out, how many guys, in your opinion, off this Marley team could play and be good regular players for the Leafs next season?
Well, next season, I don't think there's any doubt that Travis Dermott and Andreas Johnsson, for me, is going to play next year for the Maple Leafs. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And, you know, if the Marlies clinch the cup here tonight, I would expect him to play the way he has so far in this series. He should be the MVP of the Calder Cup playoffs. And, you know, Kyle Rosen, as you said, you know, he played a bunch of games for the Leafs this year. He got sent down, and he kind of struggled, you know, through the last part of the season. But as, you know, the last 10, 15 games of the American League's regular season, he started to ramp up his game, and he's been terrific in these Calder Cup playoffs. And I think that he is certainly a guy you could plug in to the NHL next season as well, because of the, you know, his skating ability, I think, sets him apart from a lot of guys, and especially at the NHL level, when you need those guys to be able to get back and move the puck quick to get out of your zone, Kyle Rosen's, I think, a guy that could do that.
That goal he scored in game 5, coming late and then dropping the shoulder a little deke and going glove side, was practice, like something you'd come up with during a drill midway through a 65-minute workout. I think it was thread perfect.
Yeah, it was. It was terrific. And Johnsson with a great pass. And then the second goal he scored, he picked up the puck inside his own end at the top of the circle. And he outskated all the Stars players and ended up alone on the goaltender and clinched the game for the Marlies. And he's been that good. And obviously here tonight, they want to try and get it done. They don't want to have to count on having to come back on Thursday night for a game 7. But we'll see what transpires. It should be a lot of fun.
two guys for me that are ready to come to the NHL, and if you can answer this a bit, is Sheldon Keefe deserves a chance for sure ASAP. And what about Garrick Sparks? Can he be a guy that comes along here in next year and helps the team in the NHL?
Well, Mark, I'm going to agree with 100% with Sheldon Keefe. I tell you, this guy, he has been impressive, to say the least. I really think, you know, when you look at the preparation of his hockey club, you know, day in, day out, is unbelievable. And, you know, he leaves no stone unturned as far as finding out the weaknesses and the strengths of the opposition and his own players to make sure that they devise a plan to win games on a day-to-day basis. And I think that, you know, through the course of 3 years here as a head coach in the American Hockey League, he has won 157 games. And now conference finals 2 years ago and you know, hopefully a Calder Cup championship this year. I think that he could step into the National Hockey League without question and get the job done, because I think he really knows how to handle a team and how to get the most out of a hockey club. Garrett Sparks, I think he's another guy also that, you know, he had a lot to prove this season. I think that that he could bounce back and show that he could be a dominant goaltender in the American Hockey League. And, you know, a less than two goals against average and a .936 save percentage in the regular season. And he's been just as lights out here in the Calder Cup playoffs. I think that he is ready to take the next step to the National Hockey League, and he's certainly hoping that this is going to be his time after winning. If he can win a Calder Cup here, that he believes that he's going to be able to step to the next level.
You'll be able to watch it. It's on TV somewhere. I'm just telling you, it's somewhere. You'll be able to find it. Bob McGill doing color on the Toronto Maple Marlies as they get set to take on the Texas Stars. Game 6, a chance to win the Calder Cup, and he's fending off conversation requests mid-interview, so he's a professional. You know, it was about a year ago. You had a real challenge, and it's so nice to have you on and talking about this. Made big strides with your health, Bobby, and we're happy about that more than anything, and we'll look forward to your call tonight.
Well, thanks, fellas. I know it's you guys have been on the air for many years since my maiden voyage on your show at noon, so thanks for having me. It's been great.
Well, you're big daddy. One suffers, you all suffer. That's our motto. So you're in for a dime, you're in for a dollar. Thanks for doing this.
You betcha, guys.
There's Bob McGill.
You know, it's one thing about the Calder Cup and winning it, because part of it's a professional sports championship, and it should be treated as that by itself. But the point of these farm teams is to develop players for the National Hockey League, and it's going to be really, really interesting. I'll disagree with you a little bit about, I don't think this team's as good as the Norfolk team that won with John Cooper as the coach, because that team won 28 straight during the regular season and rolled through the playoffs. So that was probably the greatest AHL team ever. And they graduated some good players to the Lightning. Palat, Tyler Johnson, Alex
too, right?
Killorn,
like the next year.
Guys who are part of that team being excellent. So how many guys are they going to get off this team? That will be a fascinating question. Well, when the Marlies lost to that Norfolk team, a few of those guys went on to help the Leafs, but not as many as you'd think. And so that'll be a real interesting thing over the next couple of years.
That's the challenge between the operators and owners of these American Hockey League affiliates and the parent companies, right?
Right.
The owners want to win. They depend on it. The parent clubs, they want to develop.
But that's why it's good to have it all in
coming
under,
together.
All under one roof, right? Because then everybody's objective can be the same.
David Quinn, the New York Rangers head coach. How did that come about? What was his first experience like with the Rangers? Did he have a heads up that he was the guy? He'll join us next, his debut voyage on Hockey Central at noon. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
It's the radio show in podcast form. The Starting Lineup with Brady and Price. Available at iTunes or with your podcatcher of choice. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Continuing on Hockey Central at noon. This is a little different. Here's the new head coach of the New York Rangers, David Quinn, who joins Darren Millard, Mark Savard, and Damian Cox. And David, congratulations on your appointment. The strange part about it is very rare that we bring on a guest for the first time that none of us have really had any interaction with. So you're breaking new ground here. And so we have, it opens up a lot of questions for you in the sense of.
Where are you from, Dave?
And long walks on the beach or. So where did the Rangers go when they first contacted you about your interest or your approach to the game?
I probably got a phone call probably 2 or 3 days after the coaching change. And obviously I've had a long relationship with Chris Drury and Jeff Gorton. I mean, these are two guys I've known for a long time. And, you know, we've talked a lot of hockey over the years. And I've been very fortunate in my coaching career to coach at a lot of different stops. And, you know, I think as the more we talk, the more it seemed like a great fit from both sides. And I just feel very fortunate to be in this position.
So what's your philosophy then?
On hockey, obviously, how we're going to play.
Yeah.
Obviously, and every coach says this. I mean, the way the game's going, you want to play a fast game. I mean, I don't think you've ever heard a coach say they want to play a slow game, but, you know, we want to play a fast puck pursuit, puck possession game built around good structural defense. And, you know, that's something that, you know, and if you look at the teams, the way things have gone in the NHL, especially throughout the playoffs. I mean, you're watching this NHL Stanley Cup Finals, it's a track meet, yet they're also responsible defensively. And I think for any team to have success, you know, those three things have to be part of the equation, the philosophy. Now, you know, sitting here and saying that's what we're going to do is one thing, but coaching is getting people to do it. I mean, we're all basically, I don't say we're saying the same thing over and over again, but, you know, our job as coaches is to get players to do it, not to tell them to do it. So, you know, that's going to be the challenge.
The NHL, as you know, has been traditionally reluctant over the years, over the decades, to hire U.S. college coaches. That's just been the way it was. And then Dave Hakstol gets the job in Philly. And now this year, two of you, Jim Montgomery in Dallas and yourself. Why, in your mind, are teams, I guess the Rangers in Dallas specifically, I guess more willing to look at the U.S. college system as a place to go get coaches than the league has in the past?
Well, I think the game's evolving at the NHL level. I mean, you're seeing more college players play in the National Hockey League. You know, we've been very fortunate at BU for a long, long time to have a lot of high-end players. And, you know, I think in the direction the league's going with younger players, with the salary cap and the challenges that pose, younger players are being inserted in the league probably sooner than they should be. That's just the ramifications of having the salary cap, the hard cap, especially in the NHL. And, you know, I was fortunate because I was able to, you know, I'm a college coach that has some pro coaching experience. I was fortunate enough to coach in the American Hockey League for 3 years and assistant in the National Hockey League. So I think maybe that may have opened up doors for me more so than guys that hadn't had that experience. And, you know, there's just a lot of good coaches in college hockey. I mean, there's a lot that goes into coaching college hockey. And it's, you know, obviously I'm a little biased. I think, you know, college hockey's been overlooked for too long. And it's certainly, I'm certainly fortunate to be in a position in this day and age where, you know, people are being a little bit more open-minded.
David, I was really fortunate myself to come in the league with the Rangers and play two seasons there. This is an amazing, amazing organization, as I'm sure you're seeing already, but a passionate fan base. Are you a little on edge here this year? Because, I mean, it is a rebuild, you say, but I know they're still going to want to win up there, and I think you do have some nice pieces. I think you guys should be able to win some games. So are you excited and a little worried about that on the same sentence?
I'm excited, and, you know, it was funny, and I actually mentioned this in my press conference. You know, when I left Boston University in 2009 to become a head coach in the American League, you know, I'd never coached pro hockey before. I'd only been a head coach for 3 years previously. So there's a little bit of a knot in my stomach when I left BU to be a head coach in Lake Erie because there's a little bit of uncertainty. You know, you're not sure. I'm sure we've all gone through that. Whenever you take on a new endeavor, there's, you know, there's that knot in your stomach. And I don't have that knot in my stomach today. I think I've been very fortunate in my coaching career to all the stops along the way, I think, have prepared me for this. I'm fortunate that I got a familiarity with a lot of the guys on the team. I've coached probably five or six of them. I've got a relationship with probably 8 to 10 of them. And certainly having the relationship with Jeff and Chris, you know, all of us being on the same page, the comfort level, it really made it a no-brainer decision for me. And I think that's probably why I feel so, you know, why I have the excitement that I have and not not the maybe the nervousness that maybe you may anticipate a first-time coach having in the National Hockey League.
So you mentioned you were a head coach in the American Hockey League and then an assistant in the NHL, but then you went back to college. At that point in your mind, were you kind of closing the door on the NHL, that it wasn't going to happen? Or, like, usually once guys are in the NHL, they want to stay there. How did it work for you, and why did you choose that path?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, Mark's been in Boston, so I think Mark has a great feel of college hockey and how much it means to the city of Boston. And being an alum at BU and, you know, the great tradition and the opportunity to coach at, you know, one of the premier college programs in the country and get high-end players and to be a head coach just made a lot of sense for me at that time. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of missed in pro hockey were the relationships that you have at the collegiate level. Okay. You know, when you coach a guy, it's not just a four-year experience. You're friends with them when they move on. There's their lifelong friendships, and that was something that I kind of missed in my 4 years coaching pro hockey. And, you know, it was a great opportunity. And, you know, I think in coaching, you have to be careful in trying to plant your next move. I think, you know, the key is to, you know, whatever job you have, do the best job you can and be totally in on that, and whatever happens from it, happens from it. And I had no plans to come back to the National Hockey League. I just wanted to do the best job I could at BU. And, you know, my plan was to stay there as, you know, and maybe retire. I mean, that was something I was hoping to do. And, you know, I think, you know, this profession is very volatile. And sometimes opportunities come up that you never anticipate. And, you know, like I said, this was just an incredible opportunity that I couldn't pass up.
David Quinn is with us, New York Rangers head coach, as he takes over the Original Six franchise, chatting with Mark Savard, Damon Cox, and yours truly, Darren Millard. How long did you wait before you chatted with Henrik?
We haven't had a chance to talk yet. I've been talking with Jeff and Chris today about when I'm going to head over to Sweden. That's something that I am going to do, and he and I are going to talk here in the next few days for sure.
He's already skating, which is unusual.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've heard that. I've been in the New York area, so I've actually been out with four or five guys so far here. Just grab lunch and dinner just to kind of, you know, introduce myself and get to know the team and the players.
So what do you, what's your approach to this goaltender and how much he plays?
Well, that's something that we'll all talk about, and he'll certainly, you know, we'll monitor him. And listen, you know, to have one of the best goalies in the world and in the NHL is a huge advantage when you're going through what we're going through. Like Mark alluded to, we're, you know, a little bit of a rebuild or a reset, but, you know, that's not the mindset of the staff or the players. I mean, we want to win as many games as possible, make the playoffs, and see how far we can go. And, you know, starting with a goalie like Hank, it certainly makes that a little bit easier.
Hank's answer is going to be 82.
82.
I guarantee it.
82 games.
Why at his age, he's so damn good.
Yeah. David, you talked about the guys that, you know, talking to Lundqvist and getting to know your new players. One of the things about the college route is you have recruited guys and now you're leaving BU. How do you handle it with those guys who thought they were going to be playing for David Quinn for 4 years and now they're going to be playing for somebody else? What's your approach to that? And what's it, you know, do you try to reach out to those guys and say, guys, this is my situation. I didn't expect to leave, but I am leaving. And how do you handle it?
Well, it's very similar to what, you know, what the players go through at BU when they leave early. You know, it's just, right. You know, it's probably the hardest thing I've had to do was, you know, go back after I did agree to become the head coach of the Rangers, go back and talk to the team and, you know, tell them I was leaving. It was incredibly emotional and more so for me than the players, because at 19 and 20, you thought, oh, it's too bad, coach is leaving, who's next? You know, you know, that's just the way it is. But no, it's, you know, they understand. I mean, anybody who is in the hockey world understands, you know, leaving BU is not easy for me. But this one just checked all the boxes. It's, you know, it's two guys that I have a lot of trust in and a lot of faith in, and two guys that I, you know, have great relationships with, and Jeff and Chris. And, you know, like I said, the more we talk, the more we're all on the same page. And, you know, it's the New York Rangers. And I'm 52. I'm not getting any younger, and this opportunity wasn't going to come up again.
So what do you think it'll be like the first time that you walk out from the tunnel and the dressing room and stand behind that bench in that arena?
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to coach in the rink.
I know, but different, before. Right?
This is going to be a lot different for sure. But, you know, I remember doing it the first time as a head coach. You know, you just, you know, we're going to play Cornell at Madison Square Garden and you're ready to go on. And then when you start making that walk through the tunnel, the chill start, and you're just, holy moly, this is MSG, you know. So I would imagine there'll be a level of excitement that I probably haven't had in my coaching career. And but, I mean, as you guys know, once the puck drops, it's amazing how all of a sudden you get dialed into what you're supposed to be doing, and, you know, those butterflies leave you and you just start coaching or playing or whatever your responsibilities are that night.
David, a lot of people have looked at the Las Vegas situation and what a remarkable run, but no one's really, and Darren and I have talked about this repeatedly, been really able to explain how they were able to go in a year from having no players to getting to the Stanley Cup final. Have you observed what they've done closely, and are there lessons for not just the New York Rangers and other teams to take out of what Vegas was able to do?
Yeah, I think there are for sure, but I think the league, you know, put them in a position where they were going to be able to get good players. I know the expansion rules changed for them the last time that the league did expand. And I think, I don't know whether it's, I think they had 6 first-rounders and 7 second-rounders or vice versa. So they had talent, and, you know, they had a hell of a goalie. And, you know, Gerard did an unbelievable job coaching them. They were playing fast. There was clarity. There was never any indecision with the way they were playing. And they were all pulling in the same direction. So, you know, you don't get to the Stanley Cup Finals without talent. Now, did they have the most talent in the league? No, but they had enough talent combined with the way they played and the goalie to get to where they were.
And that takes me into my favorite quote from you since taking the job is, everybody's asking what the Rangers are going to do, how you're going to play, and your philosophy and free agent acquisitions. And you just said there's no reason why a 24-year-old or a 25-year-old inside your own organization right now that played last year can't get better and improve. And that's basically what Vegas did. They had a bunch of guys who just got better at the
made
same time.
Better, yeah.
And those two quotes sort of come together.
Yeah, that's our job as coaches. I mean, you know, everyone's looking for answers outside the locker room and the organization. You know, you go through our roster, and hey, if everybody can get 5 to 10% better, you got 23 guys doing that, you're going to have a big improvement and a much better hockey team. And, you know, I don't want to go Bill Belichick on you, but if you can just get dialed in and focus on the moment and getting better on a daily basis and creating an environment where people want to come to the rink, I think you have a chance.
Well, you're going to wear a hoodie?
Like Belichick?
No, cut-off sleeves, maybe. Cut-off sleeves.
Yeah, I like the cut-off sleeves. But that's the excitement of this whole thing. You know, Vegas was able to go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, and we talk about rebuilds now and when these new kids coming in. That's what makes it most exciting, I think, is that you never know, right? You put in the right system.
You never know.
You never know. So I think that's exciting. And if you need a PP coach, Quinner, I'm right here.
Oh, a PP consultant.
Oh, very nice.
I did give Gerard some tips throughout the playoffs. So
there.
All right, still forming the staff. I'll put that on the board.
Say hi to Chris Drury for me and not talk to him. Thanks.
Thanks, David. This has been a pleasure. We'll chat with you again, and
right,
congratulations.
Guys.
Take care.
Thanks a million. All right, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
David Quinn going from the college ranks over to the New York Rangers. Just want to mention that there's a golf tournament being held this week, and the U.S. Open, and Garrett Rank, the NHL referee.
There's a golf tournament going on this week. It's called the U.S. Open.
I believe it's
four rounds.
It's 4 rounds.
Starts Friday.
But if you don't play very well, you only get to play 2. Mackenzie Hughes and Aaron Baddeley are his first 2-round playing partners. And then the next week, Aaron Rank goes from Aaron Baddeley.
Okay.
Garrett Rank goes from the U.S. Open to
playing
the
with Mark Savard.
Ontario Mid-Am.
Mid-Amateur, yep.
Playing with you.
Yes. That'll be awesome. So I get to play with him for 2 rounds for sure, and that's on Tuesday and Wednesday at the Burlington Golf and Country Club next week after his U.S. Open. So I wish him the best up there, and hopefully gets all tired out. And
don't be a player and chirp the referee the whole time.
Right? I'm not. We're going to have some nice chats. I'm sure he's going to tell me which guys didn't like me. And there might be in a couple refs that didn't like me.
You're both going to need to make the cut. Play all 4 rounds.
Yeah, exactly.
to complete that list.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm just joking. You're a good guy. Damien's a bit of a... Have you ever played golf with Damien?
Not yet. I heard he got his swing lessons. So once he's done with his coaching in 6 years, I'll play with him.
He has turned into a total golf ball.
He loves it.
Like, he just dialed in. You two would have a great time. You wouldn't listen to each other.
And then he could take my sticks out.
You would just be talking. Oh, yeah. Do you use the wraps? Because if you use wrap grips on your golf clubs, he can help you.
Good night.
Thanks to David Quinn for joining us, and you for listening on this parade day in Washington.